But you see, however much you mask it under lofty ideals, I mean, the most religious people in the world, the greatest saints, are the veriest rascals. I've known lots of them. I must tell you in confidence, I've known a lot of clergymen, and the filthiest stories I have ever heard in my life were told me by clergymen. So, in Hebrew theology, incidentally, that there is a thing called the Yetzer Hara, and in the beginning of time, when God created Adam, he implanted in him the Yetzer Hara, and the Yetzer Hara means the wayward spirit. He put something funny in man so that man would be a little odd, and it was the result of the Yetzer Hara that Adam was tempted by Eve, who was tempted by the serpent, to eat that famous fruit. But the Hebrew believes that everything that God created is good, including the Yetzer Hara. Because if it hadn't been for the Yetzer Hara, there would have nothing ever happened. Everybody would have obeyed God, and God would have said, well, this is kind of a bore. So, now, but you see, you can't just get up to someone and say, disobey me. Because if they do, they're obeying you. See, that's a double bind. Say to somebody, disobey me. But God was much more subtle than that. He didn't tell Adam to disobey him. He told him to obey. But subtly, he put this Yetzer Hara thing in like that, so that God would say, well, I'm not responsible. Well, this thing's going to happen of its own, because what everybody wants is something to happen on its own. And everybody wants that. Because, you see, the sensation of being you, this curious, lonely center of awkward sensitivity, subject to the most peculiar feelings and pains and anxieties and all that sort of thing, all that is an essential prerequisite for feeling something else. These two experiences go together. If you want, in other words, if you want to be omnipotent and you want to live in a universe where nothing happens except exactly what you will to happen. In other words, you say, I would like to be God, if you think that's the way God is. And everything is therefore totally under my control. Everything is absolutely transparent to my intelligence. I have no problems. A lot of people coming on like they think they've attained this state. Well, that's a lot of bunk. Nobody wants to be in that position, because there wouldn't be anything to it. Because once everything is under your central control, well, just nothing is happening. It's a bore from beginning to end. So what anyone or any being whatsoever who has a sense of centrality, who has a sense of selfhood, who has a sense of identity, that sense of identity is inseparable from something else going on that is defined as not being me, as not being under my control, and that may jump at any time. It might even eat me. So, what I want you first of all to understand is that these two sensations, one of being the lonely, central, sensitive, vulnerable self, living in the midst of a world that feels other, but is not under your control, I want to try and show you that these two sensations are really one sensation, or rather two aspects of one sensation. You couldn't have the one experience without the other experience. Now, this is a rather good thing to know, because it means that you won't panic if you discover this. People who suffer from chronic anxiety are always in doubt, you see, about this relationship between what I feel as myself and what I feel as something else. Let's suppose you're anxious about your relationship with other people. You walk into a room, like this restaurant here, and you sit down at dinner, and there's some stranger opposite to you. And you know nothing about the stranger, and you begin, maybe you feel a little reluctant to open conversation. You don't know what kind of a, whether this person is going to be sane, or some kind of a crackpot, or some kind of a awful stuffy square, or you don't know what it is. So you start fencing around a little, but you get the feeling, you see, of, now I better watch myself, because I do, after all, want to make a good impression. I don't want to make an enemy. So you watch yourself, and this is a funny thing then begins called self-consciousness. And people say sort of to each other, and usual way in which strangers come on. And also there is involved in this encounter the secret games that people are playing all the time to defend themselves by putting other people down. This is really a very wicked game, but every living being, if the truth be told, is a manifestation of everything that there is in what we call God in old-fashioned language. Every human being is. And as I look around, I can see every one of you as the divine being coming at me in a different way. Crazy. But the thing is that what we do is to try and prevent people from realizing that this is so. By pointing out to them in the most subtle ways their limitations. And seeing if we can phase them. Put a person off a little bit. Make them uncertain. Make them unsteady. It's like all sorts of games you can play where if a person wavers, he loses. But people play that with each other all the time. And the reason they do it is not the reason they think. It is that if everybody were perfectly clear that they were a manifestation of the divine being, nothing very much would happen. But so as to keep everybody a little bit unclear about it, the whole thing bugs itself and creates these little doubts. So what we're beginning with is these little doubts, you see, these sensations of blockage, of not being very sure of yourself, but knowing very much indeed that you are yourself and that you're alone and it's all up to you. The terrible feeling of responsibility. So, but what I'm trying to point out to you is if you intensify that feeling and bring it to its highest pitch, you will immediately realize that you are aware of it only by virtue of the entire sensation of something else. Something defined as not you. So the feeling of not you and the feeling of you are relative. They go together, and you can't have the one without the other. And if you can't have the one without the other, that means there's a secret conspiracy between the two. They are really the same, but pretending to be different. Because the whole idea is if there wasn't a difference, you wouldn't know anything was happening. I mean, if it was all the same, it's like that song of Bob Dylan's, which says something like, "Well, I'm just like a guy like you. I'm just like anybody else. No use me talking to you, because you're just like me." So, the whole point is then, if everybody of us all were the same and all shared the same ideas exactly and so on, there'd be nothing to talk about, because everybody would be a bore. There'd be just yourself echoing back at you, you see. And you'd feel like a madman in a hall of mirrors. Mm-hmm. Where everything you went was just yourself, you see, in all directions, just you. Well, that's no fun. But you may think that I'm speaking in favor of some kind of schizoid pluralistic universe. No, the whole point is this, that difference and every kind of variety of differentiation is the way through which unity is discovered. I mean, this business about vive la petite différence is very important. And the fact that men and women, for example, as a primordial kind of difference, never can really understand each other, is tremendously exciting. Because that's a way by which something happens. If it makes a difference, then it's there. If it doesn't make a difference, it doesn't matter. And what doesn't matter doesn't exist, because it has no matter. So, however, it is wherever you notice a difference, the difference has two sides. What it is and what it's not. And these two sides, since you can't have the one side without the other side, they're really one. Because they go together, inseparably. So when you get this extreme sense of your own existence as a rather painful fact in the middle of everything else, the everything else feeling and the you feeling are two poles of one and the same process. So that the real you is what lies, as it were, between these poles and includes both of them. Now this is the fundamental principle of the whole way in which ancient Chinese thought developed. The philosophy of the yang and the yin. This is one of the oldest ideas in the universe. I mean, no, that's a rather too big language. On this planet. And the philosophy which I shall have occasion to speak of a little bit more later, of the Book of Changes, the Yi Jing, is based entirely on this. That the universe is the interplay of difference. And the primordial difference is between up and down, back and front, black and white, is and isn't, male and female, positive and negative. So the word yang in Chinese means or refers to the south side of a mountain, which is the sunny side. The word yin refers to the north side of the mountain, which is the shady side. Did you ever see a south-sided mountain only, with no north side? Or it may also, yang may refer to the north bank of a river, which gets the sun, and yin to the south bank of the river, which gets the shade. And so you will remember this. And one half, of course, is colored dark. As it were, two fishes interlocked. And they are chasing each other. They actually form, you see more complicated symbols in which they form a helix. This is a helix. And the spiral nebulae are shaped this way, in the form of a helix. And this is the position of man and woman making love, fundamentally. Where I'm trying to get inside you, and you're trying to get inside me, and we're trying to get into the middle of each other, but there's somehow or other a difference, and we can never quite get there. Just like if I want to see the back of my head, I can go round and round, and I can chase it, but I never quite catch up with it. But that's what makes everything work. It is said in the Vedanta Sutras that the Lord, the Supreme Knower of all things, who is the knower in all of us, doesn't know itself in the same way that fire doesn't burn itself and a knife doesn't cut itself. So nothing to God, even, you see, would be more mysterious than God. Do you know somehow how you surprise yourself? For example, when you feel your own pulse and you suddenly feel this life going on in you, which you're not willing. Or there are all sorts of ways in which you can, say you have the belly rumbles and you didn't intend to have the belly rumbles and suddenly it happened, or you had hiccups. And now, are you having hiccups or not? Is this something you're doing? Or is it merely something that's happening to you, as if it was raining and the rain was happening to you? This is a very debatable question. Consider breathing. Are you breathing, or is it breathing you? Well, you can feel it either way. You can decide to breathe and feel that you're breathing in just the same way that you walk when you want to. On the other hand, when you forget about breathing altogether, it still goes on. And so it seems to be something that happens to you. Which is it? Do you grow your hair, or does your hair just grow by itself? What enables you to make a decision? When you decide, do you first decide to decide? Or do you just decide? Now, how do you do that? Nobody knows, you see. When Zhuang Zi tells the story that one philosopher asked another, how can one get the Tao, which is the power of nature, so as to have it for one's own? And the other philosopher answers, your life is not your own. It is the delegated adaptability of Tao. Your offspring are not your own. They are the outputs of Tao. You move, you know not how. You are at rest, you know not why. These are the operations of Tao. So how could you have it for your own? That's a funny thing, then. We can experience ourselves through and through as something that just happens. Look at it this way. If you feel your body, your skin, the solidity of you, and with regard what marvelous eyes you have, which are the power which generate light and color out of all these electrical quanta in the external world. And these ears, these beautiful shells that you wear on the side of your head, with their little spiral bones, the cochlea inside, you know, all that. It's marvelous. But you feel, you don't feel responsible for this. You don't know how it's made, if it is made. But it's you. That's what you are. That extraordinary pattern. Beautiful, gorgeous, wonderful arabesque of tubes and bones and cartilage and myriads of interconnecting electronics and nervous systems and everything wonderful. See, but the point is, most people don't own this. They don't say, this is me. They say, well, it's some kind of very clever machine which the Lord God made out of his infinite wisdom and put me in it. And this is a very limited view, because the extraordinary thing is, you see, that this is you. This extraordinary, marvelous goings-on, see? But you can feel it, all of it, as if it was just happening to you. But if you want to feel it that way, then you've got to go the whole way, and you've got to feel that your decisions just happen to you. And that the thing that you call yourself, to which things happen, is just something that happens. See? You don't know how you manage to be an ego, how you happen to be conscious. That just happened too. So happenings happen to a happening. So you can feel yourself completely irresponsible, like that, see? There's nowhere. Or, when you get that way, that's a very interesting road to run. But you can try the other way. You can extend it and say, now look here. If I really am my eyes, although I don't understand them, I mean, that is to say, I can't describe it in lines, in words, this is me. It's an extraordinary thing, but it is. Well, I don't understand how it happens. But then, you see, that's the whole point. As I made a little while ago, that the very Lord God himself doesn't understand how he happens. Because if he did, what would be the point? There'd be no mystery. There'd be no possibility of surprises. That's why there has to be yang and yin. Yang is bright, and it understands everything. Yin is dark, and damned if she'll be understood. But there are two phases of the same being. So your yang side is your conscious attention, and all the bright things you know, and all the information you have, and all the know-how, and that you know what to do. And your yin side is the other side of the yang, which enables the yang to function, because you don't know why the yang side of you functions, that is the conscious, bright, intelligent side of you. It all depends on something you don't understand at all. Because if it didn't, it wouldn't be there. Just like you wouldn't be here unless there was something else. So they move together. And therefore, if you will accept the idea that you are your own eyes and your own heart and your own ears with that wonderful little spiral cochlea inside and all these amazing gadgets here, you're all that. But you don't even think about it, but you are it. Now therefore, by a little extension of the imagination, you can very well see that if all those bones and subtleties inside you feel other than your conscious ego, but nevertheless are one with it, the same argument will go for all the other things going on around you. The sun shining, the stars twinkling, the wind blowing, and the great ocean restlessly pounding against these cliffs. That's you too. You don't control it, of course, because there has to be something about you you don't control, or you wouldn't be you. Now you see, that all that is lesson elementary in relativity. And relativity, I've talked about it in this way, which is kind of unscholarly and so on, but I wanted to get the message across, the idea across, because to understand the principle of relativity is the absolute foundation of the philosophy of the Tao. Lao Tzu takes it up in his second chapter when he says, when all the world understands beauty to be beautiful, there is already ugliness. When all the world understands goodness to be good, there is already evil. Thus, to be and not to be arise mutually. High and low are posited mutually. Long and short are compared mutually. And he goes through a whole list of opposites and show how they create each other. It's like that wonderful little parable. The Chinese character for man looks more or less like an upturned V. And Lafcadio Hearn, in one of his books, tells a story of a Japanese girl telling her little sister the meaning of the character for man by taking two sticks of wood and balancing them together on the ground, two sticks of firewood, so that they form the upturned V. And she says to her little sister, this is the character for man. Because neither stick will stand up unless it has the other to help it. And so, you know, we must dig each other. But the profounder meaning underneath this is there's no self without other. And no man, and don't forget, get back to the original point, every creature in the world feels it's a man. I don't mean a male, but a human. And that is because it is in this situation where the thing it feels as itself, as its separate identity, is supported by the equal and opposite sensation of other. Center, periphery. Here, there. Now, then. Is, isn't. Or whatever. These two are the yang and the yin, the two poles that hold each other up. So the Zen poem says, when misfortune comes, treat it as a blessing. When fortune comes, treat it as a disaster.